If you'd like to listen to our podcasts without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, enhanced show notes for select shows, and more. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or the first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code ECLIPSE to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code ECLIPSE. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the DSR Daily, in which we attempt to look at some of the news from around the world and provide a little perspective on it. I'm David Rothkopf, one of your three co-hosts here, joined as ever by Chris Kottmeyer. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. And Riley Fessler, how are you, Riley?
Pretty good.
Why don't you kick us off, Riley?
So the White House has made it clear that the United States will not be involved in any retaliatory strikes by Israel against Iran. Following an attack, Iran launched over 300 drones and missiles at Israel in response to an Israeli strike on its consulate in Syria earlier this month. The majority of the projectiles were intercepted by Israeli, U.S., and allied defenses. And President Joe Biden has advised the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to deliberate carefully on how to respond to Iran's unprecedented direct attack. The advice was given amidst discussions on how to de-escalate the situation, despite some U.S. lawmakers and officials urging for a more robust response. So I think this is clearly an attempt to kind of de-escalate the situation and avoid a wider regional conflict. Hopefully cooler heads will prevail, but we will see.
Well, that's right. And in Israel, of course, the far right is putting a lot of pressure on Netanyahu to do something big. There are people here on the far right, including John Bolton, who went on television this weekend to make the same kind of case. I think the Biden administration is concerned that this could trigger a real region-wide war. And I think a message that Iran got over the weekend that may have been a little bit chilling for them is not only did their 300 missiles and drones not hit their target in Israel, they inflicted very little damage, but that a real regional coalition that brought together some of the regional Arab states helped the United States, the UK, and Israel defend Israel. And, you know, that's not happened before. The Jordanians intercepted a number of the drones. I believe the Saudis were involved. I believe others were involved. And so Iran is this morning a little more isolated, and I think it can expect something from Israel, although the question is whether it will be big and overt or whether they will go back to the shadow war and start attacking, you know, individuals or targets in a little bit more of a covert way. We shall see, but of course, this all comes in the context of the ongoing war in Gaza. The Israelis have said that they're going to continue to prosecute it. They've said they're going to go into Rafah, and the famine in Gaza continues to be a problem. So it's a very complicated issue where a number of countries that want to defend Israel also are critical of what it is doing in Gaza. It's going to take quite some time for this to sort itself out. I think it's a good thing that the Biden administration was in power here in the U.S., able to coordinate the response, which led this weekend's attack to be largely a demonstration event rather than something that inflicted broad damage. Final point, any kind of conflict is likely to produce or has the chance of producing unintended consequences. And that's what the Biden administration is worried about. The Israelis may say, well, we want to go in and we want to just hit this target. But if it hits something else and escalates and that triggers the Iranians or others, it gets into a rather serious problem. So tense, tense Middle East right now. And of course, the United States Congress has to grapple with, are they going to provide more aid to Israel? If they provide aid to Israel, are they going to provide it to Ukraine, which could certainly use the kind of air defenses that Israel has benefited from over the weekend? That's going to be one of the big stories of the week ahead. Chris?
First criminal trial of a former U.S. president, Donald Trump, is set to begin with jury selection this morning in a Manhattan courtroom, where he faces 34 felony charges for falsifying business records to conceal a sex scandal involving a payment to porn star Stormy Daniels. The trial is being presided over Judge Juan Merchan, and the charges stem from a $130,000 payment made by Trump's former attorney slash fixer, Michael Cohen, who will be testifying in this trial later on. Yesterday's Daily Blast with Greg Sargent talked about this case with a prosecutor in Florida who says that despite everyone stating that the case wasn't strong, that there are elements of this case that are particularly strong. Jury selection should be interesting, as I'm sure Trump supporters will be angling their way to get on the jury. So we'll see how this circus plays out in the coming days.
Certainly already garnered a lot of attention. There's never been a U.S. president on criminal trial before. Of course, this president faces a number of prosecutions over the months ahead. At least he does if he doesn't get elected president and shut some of them down. And, you know, this case, some people have derided as a secondary case, not as big as the others. But, you know, it is in kind very much linked to the others because it's a case about trying to defraud American voters in order to get Trump elected by hiding the truth about him at a time when that truth would be extremely damaging following the Access Hollywood tapes. You know, as you say, there are aspects of this case that are very clear. He paid the money. There are a lot of receipts on that and sought to do so in a way to hide it. I think the tougher portion of this case is going to be proving that he did so to defraud voters, to hide the truth about himself in order to help win the election. But there are some interesting people going to come and testify, not just Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniel, Hope Hicks, and others. And Trump has to be there each and every day as a criminal defendant, and he's not going to like that at all. So we'll see how he responds. Also, there is a gag order on him, which he has already violated, and it'll be interesting to see how the judge responds to that. Riley?
During a high-level meeting in Pyongyang, Zhao Leji, a top Chinese official, reinforced China's commitment to North Korea, marking the highest-level diplomatic engagement between the two allies in recent years. Zhao, who is third in the Communist Party hierarchy and heads China's ceremonial parliament, concluded his three-day visit by meeting with Kim Jong-un. According to state media reports, the discussions focused on enhancing multifaceted cooperation but did not address regional political dynamics. The meeting was meant to underscore the enduring alliance between China and North Korea, which has been particularly crucial as of late as North Korea faces increased international isolation due to its missile tests and nuclear ambitions.
And North Korea has also played an important role in helping to get equipment to the Russians in order to fight the war in Ukraine. And this is a little bit more about how this alliance among these states that are opposed to, you know, the U.S.-led order in the world is evolving. You know, I think it's an important embrace from the Chinese. I think it's important from the rest of the world perspective as well, because the Chinese often prevail upon Kim Jong-un not to do the craziest thing that's on his mind. And sometimes what the craziest thing on his mind is pretty darn crazy. So having this kind of engagement also can imply a certain kind of leverage. That's positive. at least in terms of, for example, keeping a lid on potential conflict on the Korean Peninsula. Chris?
Sudan is facing one of the worst humanitarian crises amid a power struggle between top generals, leading to widespread starvation and displacement. The conflict between the military and the rapid support forces has killed thousands and displaced over 8.5 million people. Fighting has devastated Sudan's economy, causing food prices to skyrocket and making essentials unaffordable for many. Despite international awareness, efforts to mediate peace have failed, exacerbating the crisis as the country approaches its lean season, which could push many into famine.
It's a horrific story, made more horrific by the fact that the world is not stepping up, and that a lot of factors suggest it's going to get worse over the course of the weeks and months ahead. It's the kind of story that exists across Africa, and that we will keep make an effort to try and track going forward, because famines and wars do not just occur in places where people who help drive media ratings live, and the world should be doing more than it is, this needs to be moved up the list of priorities. Riley.
Colorado's Democrat-dominated House has passed a bill banning the sale and transfer of semi-automatic firearms, which would potentially align the state with others like California and New York that have similar bans. The bill now moves to the Democratic-led state Senate, but faces uncertain prospects due to Colorado's historically mixed political leanings and less dominant Democratic control in the Senate. Governor Jared Polis has expressed reservations about the ban, reflecting concerns from within his party about overreaching gun control measures. The effort follows the enactment of less comprehensive gun control laws last year, which, of course, as we all know, was prompted by a series of tragic mass shootings in the state. And unsurprisingly, the bill has sparked significant opposition from Republicans, who have trotted out the usual talking points to state why they think this is a violation of the Second Amendment.
Yeah, because people really need to have automatic weapons, weapons of war, or semi-automatic weapons, weapons of war, in order to be able to, hunt for a herd of elk at the same time. There is no reason that people should have assault weapons. When there was a ban, kind of violent gun crime went down. It was allowed to expire. That was a big mistake. That was a national ban. While this may not pass, the United States is not going to be over its gun problem until certain rational steps are taken. And one of the most obvious is banning assault weapons. Again, another story that will not go away, undoubtedly will have us talking in the next couple of weeks about some kind of mass shooting someplace that was conducted with assault weapons. Of course, we'll be there for that. We're going to make an effort to get the DSR Daily out to you every morning before your commute, so that you can listen to it on your commute or as you prepare to go to the office. That's going to have us putting this up, 2-3 hours earlier every day. We do that because our listeners have said that's what they want, and we are trying to be responsive to you. If you've got other ideas, please reach out to us regarding this or any of our other podcasts. We are trying to be as responsive as possible. We love our audience. And we wish all of you a good day, and to come back again tomorrow for more from us here at the DSR Daily. Listen to all our other podcasts too. For more on them, go to the DSRnetwork.com and you'll see a rundown of all our shows. Until then, thanks, Chris. Thanks, Riley. And bye-bye.